Whether you're handy or all thumbs, you're listening to the Home Improvement Show, CJAD 800.
Good morning. It's 9:06 and 6 degrees right now in downtown Montreal. It's Kelly Alexander sitting in for Ken Connors on the Home Improvement Show with Walter Assey, who, of course, is president of Renovco. Hi, Walter.
Good morning.
How are you?
You had a busy morning.
Yes.
From cocktails to cocking.
That's exactly it. And I want to let people know that if you have home improvement questions, please jump on the line. We would love for you to do that. 514-790-0800 by phone and 514-800 by text. And of course, we always love having your first name in the text. And also, if you want to text in and let us know what part of the city you are texting in from. Walter, yesterday into the evening, and I think depending on where you were living in and around Montreal, there was a fair amount of rain that came down, which is odd for this time of the year. Mm-hmm. It should be snow. What are the concerns that you want people to kind of be aware of with all of that?
Many things. It was like April showers, I would say. The amount of rain that was going down was actually important for this time of the year because the land is frozen. So the water tend to go straight from the earth down to the foundation without being absorbed by the soil. And that makes can wreak havoc into weaker basements or basements with foundation cracks. Also, if you have any flat roofs, and you have block drains, that means that the snow is melting. And now you're going to have all kind of different issues. What a word of caution. When this happens, especially when it comes to foundations, it takes a few hours for it to trickle down. So typically, if you were checking your basement last night, you might not see anything. You're better off checking it again this morning because now it would have had time to kind of trickle in into your basement if you have any issues.
Okay. And speaking of, you know, because I actually had a problem last spring. I guess it was April 6th. I think that's when we had that crazy kind of ice storm and all mm-hmm. that. And I remember that my sump pump battery decided to die, mm-hmm. like quicker than it should have, even though I believed I had checked it. So what do you want people to be aware of when it comes to your sump pump and being ready for the fact that the weather is ever changing here in Montreal these days?
Correct. There's many things we could do. I mean, a backup pump is a must, especially with our torrential rain. Now one pump is working a lot more than it should. That's number one. And number two, sometimes it just can't supply. So having two pumps with different settings on the floaters will help a lot, especially if you put a battery-powered pump. It has an alarm on it. So if it kicks in, that means there's something wrong with your main pump. So it tells you something. The other thing is, beside the backup pump, we like to put those water sensor pucks.
Yep.
So you put them strategically at a certain height, and the smart ones notify you. So if you're out of the house and it detects water at a certain level, it gives you a notification on your phone, so you know there's something that's wrong, and you come and check it out. That's pretty much what should be done. A lot of people like to go with the water pressure ones, the water-powered pumps, they're not as efficient. So if you are in a high water table area, they don't work as well.
Okay.
If you are in a secondary area where you have water every now and then, maybe. But the battery power pump have usually the same efficiency as a real pump.
You're listening to the Home Improvement Show with Walter Assey, president of Renovco. It's Kelly Alexander sitting in for Ken Connors. And again, if you have any questions for Walter, please do join us at 514-790-0800 by phone and 514-800 by text. And we'd love your first name. And if you'd be so kind even to let us know what part of the city you're texting in from. Walter, we have a text from Chuck, who's in Beaconsfield. And he says that for windows that fog up, is it better to replace them or have them vented by a specialist in this?
It's a good question. So when the window fog up, that means now you lost your argon gas. So there is certain loss of efficiency in the window. Usually the applications will cosmetically get rid of the problem, but that doesn't mean that you will have the argon gas back. So that's one thing. The other thing is, it's in a couple of years, you might have the problem again. So it becomes a question of how old is the window. If it's just this one window in the house that is doing that, you know, yeah, maybe you could look into just doing that one window and seeing. But typically what happens is when one window starts fogging up like this, others start to do the same as well. So it becomes really a question of how efficient you want your windows to be and how old they are. You know, if you're living in the house for the next 20 years, maybe it's better that you replace, you start thinking about replacing the windows. If not, that for cosmetic reasons, then you could just, you know, have it done. And because it could be irritating to have that fogging up and you can't see the outside and what have, especially in the winter. So it's a much faster and less intrusive measure. So that's, and much cheaper as well. You know, so you kind of have to wait.
And do you start, like, you know, if you have windows, like, do you do them all, let's say, on the first floor? Do you start on the upper floor? Like, does it matter?
It doesn't really matter. I mean, usually where you want to start with the windows, if you have a certain budget, you always start with the area that have the most wind exposure.
Okay.
Because that's the one that gets really beaten up the most, and that's where you lose most of your energy. You know, and we all have that one side that usually gets it more than the other ones. Mm-hmm. That would be the smarter way to do it. If... just a word of caution on windows. They changed a couple of years ago the Energy Star, if you want, conditions. And now it's way more rigorous than it used to be. So you have to ask the manufacturer that question if they are still Energy Star. And if they're not, you know, in a lot of cases, the type of window makes a difference if it's Energy Star or not. So if you want to absolutely have a double glazed window, a slider might not do it for you, but a crank window or a guillotine would do it in this case to have that Energy Star rating. And the reason you want to have it is because if there's any subventions from the government, they will pay you back money for that. And there are some right now. If you don't have an Energy Star rating, you won't get that money from the government. So it's important that you do. And ask the questions, because not all these manufacturers now are offering that that option, simply because, you know, they were used to a certain way of doing production, and now with the new laws that were imposed on the Energy Star rating, the double glaze in a lot of cases did not become is not anymore Energy Star, so now they have to sell you triple glaze. And triple glaze is a lot more expensive and it's heavier to install. So that's why you have to ask a lot more questions. And if you don't ask for it, you're not going to get it.
When you are changing windows, should you, you know, because like, is it ever a good idea to DIY it?
I mean, DIY it if you know enough, yes.
Okay.
If you don't, no. You know, I've seen DIYers that do better jobs than pros.
Yeah, okay.
Depends how handy you are, right?
Yeah, I'm not handy.
It's, you know, window is, there's a lot of moving part to it. I know it looks a bit straightforward when you watch people do it, but there's a lot more to it. To start with, you have to be a very good measurer. You have to measure it. And the common mistake is we measure the window from the inside and you have to do it from the outside. The reason most people don't do it from the outside is because they don't want to put a ladder.
So
it's easier for them. So that's number one. And the reason you want to make sure you're measuring well is because if you measure it too tight, then it's not going to fit. And you're not going to give it that expansion gap where you can urethane and so on and so forth. And from the same token, if it's too small, you're going to have issues as well with wind and energy and everything else.
You're listening to the Home Improvement Show on CJD with Walter Assey, president of Vernovco. We'd love for you to join us, 514-790-0800 by phone and 514-800 by text. We'd love your first name in the text.
You might just need to tighten the thingamajig on the whatchamacallit. This is the Home Improvement Show on CJAD 800.
Good morning. It's Kelly Alexander sitting in for Ken Connors on the Home Improvement Show with Walter Assey, president of Vernovco. We'd love for you to join us if you have some home improvement questions. 514-790-0800 by phone and 514-800 by text. And we'd always appreciate if you put your first name and the town that you're texting in from, because that's always cool to know. We're going to jump right over to the phone right now. We have Kim calling in from St. Laurent. Kim, good morning. And what's your question about deck boards?
Good morning. Hi. So we've got some deck boards that are, well, we've already turned them once. So now that they're starting to really shred, we really need to change them. But we've had a problem before where some of the boards, when we put new boards down, they started to twist and crack. And I'm wondering if there's a trick that you know, you guys can tell us to make sure that we're not going to have that problem and, you know, waste a good deck board in the process. And also, when is the best time to put the stain on after you put pressure-treated wood deck boards down on a back deck, please?
Okay. Great questions. One of the issues when you buy deck boards is you can't, a lot of the times you ask for deliveries because of the sheer quantity of the board you buy, and that becomes an issue because you're not picking up your boards, you're not picking them out, so a lot of them comes already with cracks in them, and these are the boards that you should not install if possible. So that's number one. Number two, there is a misconception about the new pressure-treated wood out there. In the old days, pressure-treated wood, we used to say, wait a year before you stain it, before you apply any protection to it. It's not the case anymore. So now it's in the contrary. Now when you install deck boards, you have to put protection on them, stain them, varnish them within 90 days from the time you install them.
Okay. Wow. Okay, that's fantastic.
So that's a common mistake that is being still done. A lot of people that are installing deck boards, they still think it's the same concept as years ago, and they don't put any protection and let it pass the whole season. And then all of a sudden you have all kinds of problems and cracking and warping and, you know, whatever you're having right now. So that might be one of the issues you've been having. You've been waiting too long to apply any protection on the boards. If you have an area as well that is subjected to a lot of water because you have a defective gutter or a downspout that keeps on leaking, or it's just a very exposed area to rain and what have you, then you might want to look into a different type of board, like the Trex, which is PVC boards, and these ones are usually guaranteed for life. They're more expensive to install, but then you don't have to stain them anymore, you don't have to varnish them, you don't have to sand them, and typically they don't rot, they're waterproof, so they're really a lifetime. The only issue you're going to have with them is, number one would be the price. Number two, if you choose a dark color, it might get too hot in the summer if you walk barefoot on your deck. But beside that, you don't have any issues with these types of boards.
Yeah, because I was looking at the wooden boards, and I could replace the six boards that are damaged for about $400. And if I go with having to replace the entire deck with the Trex stuff, they're quoting me something around $14,000-$15,000.
You're right. So you're right. No, no,
big problem.
100%, Kim, and that's why I said the issue with the Trex is that it is expensive. So that's why it's a question of, okay, how often am I replacing my boards? How often do I have problems with my boards? And how often I want to maintain my boards? Now with the deck, the other thing that you have to do in the protection of the deck is know which material to use for the protection. I like to usually use oil-based materials, you apply them a lot more, so you have to do it every year, but that does not peel. Whereas the other ones, they peel. So the problem is, yeah, you can maybe wait a couple of years before you reapply, but the problem is you have to sand every time. So that's why, you know, sometimes you, and the issue with preparation of decks usually lies into the, in the, when the more difficult part about it is when you start sanding it, when you start preparing it, and you know, it takes a lot longer. You have to wait, you have to wash it, pressure wash it, wait for it to dry, and so on and so forth. So in the maintenance of your new boards, just start research using the right material where you have to reapply at least once a year, but you don't have to sand and you don't have to do all these creative preparations prior.
Kim, thank you so much for calling in to 514-790-0800. And we appreciate more calls coming in. Andy, we're going to get to you in just a sec. Walter, a text has come in to 514-800 asking, do I need a special roofer for a roof with two stone chimneys? The flashing is what I'm concerned about. And this is from Mim.
So you don't, for the flashing, you don't need a roofer. You need a fer blanchier. That's the right trait to call. I mean, roofers do that type of work. But if it's more specialized, if the chimney is a bit oversized or it requires a bit more work, then a fer blanchier is the person you really need to call in this case.
Mim, thank you so much for the text. 514-790-0800 by phone and 514-800 by text. We're going to jump to Andy now from NDG. You've got a bathroom question, Andy?
Yeah. Hi, Kelly and Walter. Thanks for taking my call. So we live in, we have a upper of a coprop, so duplex, where we just have the top, and we want to move a bathroom, which may involve work below. I don't know. Is that commonly done?
What's commonly done? I didn't get
moving the bathroom.
It is commonly done. It is done where the layout really does not make any sense. Or if the bathroom is way too small for use. So it is a bigger job for sure, because you're moving all the infrastructure with it. You're moving the plumbing, the drains, the feed pipes. You're moving the electrical, the divisions, the walls, and so on and so forth. So there is a buried cost factor. And when I say the word buried cost, it's cost that typically you won't recoup in the resale simply because nobody sees it. You know, when you are spending money on roofs or spending money on new plumbing, if you ever sell the house, it's not staged enough. It's not like you have those shiny pipes that are just, you know, shining off the wall that people say, oh, you have. They don't see it, so they don't put a value necessarily to it. So it has to be very well thought of, and you have to kind of weigh the expense and the reward type of a thing.
Well, the location is just a bad location for the bathroom. The problem is that we live in a coprop, so the people below, would we be disturbing the people below us when we do that work?
That's an excellent question. So the answer is yes. The answer is, especially that you're creating new drains. Now, typically what happens is we demolish the floorboards on top to see if we can work from the top. But very seldom you have to make a hole from below in order to reroute things. So you have to have that discussion with the co-owner below, because there is a chance that you'll say you're going to have to patch a ceiling and fix it and what have you. But again, some people really don't want to have that. Now, the other issue...
Oh, Walter, can I just jump in for just a sec? Can you answer the rest of that as soon as we come back? You're listening to the Home Improvement Show with Walter Assey, president of Renovco. We'd love for you to join us, 514-790-0800 by phone and 514-800 by text. I'm Kelly, sitting in for Ken, and you're listening to CJAD 800.
You're listening to the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJAD 800.
It's 9:36, 6 degrees right now in downtown Montreal. Kelly Alexander sitting in for Ken Connors on the Home Improvement Show with Walter Assey, president of Renovco. You can join us, 514-790-0800 by phone and 514-800 by text. And we always love your first name in the text. Walter, I know you wanted to finish answering Andy's question. He was talking about, moving a bathroom and then again, maybe having to disrupt the people that live beneath him.
Yeah. Andy, you're still there?
I believe, is Andy still there? There we go.
Yeah, Andy?
Yes.
Okay, so one of the main issues that you will have moving a bathroom, and that's where I want you to put your most attention, is the drainage. That's typically where things might fail if they're not very well planned. You sound very serious about wanting to do the job. So the first thing that I would do is I would call a master plumber to have his opinion of what's doable and not doable. They're going to look where the main stack is, how far you want to go, and how they can attach to the main stack. That's your real challenge. Feed pipes are not so much of a challenge, especially with specs now we have. It's very flexible and you know, it's not so much of an issue. Usually it's the drainage that becomes an issue. And how it becomes an issue, and we're not saying it's not doable, just the slopage of it have to be planned out. So in cases where it's very far, you might have to build a bulkhead underneath in order to attach to the main stack. If it's within 3 feet, chances are it can be done. But these are questions that you have to absolutely ask a master plumber before you undertake it, just to see what the repercussions are in doing the job.
Andy, thank you so much. Thank you, Andy, for calling in. We really appreciate it. 514-790-0800 by phone and 514-800 by text. We had a text come in from Anne moments ago to 514-800, Walter, and she wants to know how often sump pumps should be replaced.
They have to be cleaned at least once a year, okay? Each manufacturer is different, so you would have to read what the warranties are on the pump and what the recommended lifespan is. Usually, in my personal opinion, once every 3 years is a good habit to start with if you have a backup pump.
Okay.
If you're not planning to have a backup pump, you're going to have to determine that by knowing how often does your sump pump kick in. If you're in a high water area and it's kicking in all the time, then, of course, the lifespan is way shorter. So that, mm-hmm. In a case like this, I would replace it at least maybe once every 2 years in this case. But it's also going to boil down to the maintenance. Do you clean it often? Do you take care of it? The quality of the water that's coming in? How much dirt there is in the pit? So there's a lot of things that comes with that to make a decision. Rule of thumb is 2 to 3 years, depending on the manufacturer. And if you have a backup pump, you can maybe go a bit further.
And how do you clean a sump pump?
So it's a question of, number one, cleaning the pit. So to ensure there's no debris, because you don't want any debris to be pumped out through the pump. You're going to break your pump in the process. So it's what you have to do is you have to ensure that your pit is cleaned on a regular basis. There's no debris in the pit. Itself, the pump, you could dismantle it, clean it, put it back on. Just make sure there's no debris stuck in it or anything like that. And that's pretty much it. It's not, you don't have to break it into pieces or anything like that.
I guess I know what I'm doing when I go home, Walter. You're listening to the Home Improvement Show on CJ8800 with Walter Assey, president of Vernovco. 514-790-0800 by phone and 514-800 by text. I should mention that the we'd love for your first name to be in the text. We're heading off to Mark now in NDG. Mark, you have a question about a chimney?
Yes, I have a flat roof on the back of my house. It has an existing chimney, which is no longer in use. Now, I want to change the roof, but I want to know if I have to take that. I want to take the chimney out. Can I take the chimney out without affecting the interior? Because it comes down through the upstairs bathroom. Is there a way to... Can I take the chimney off the roof and then later on when I redo, because I can't do both the roof and the bathroom at the same time. So I want to know if I can take the chimney off now while I redo the roof and then in later years when I decide to redo the bathroom, then remove the rest of it from the bathroom.
So the quick answer is absolutely. What you're doing is very smart because you don't have to call again a roofer. What you need to make sure of that the roofer is pretty good and agile in carpentry work because you are going to end up with a hole in your roof that would need to be reframed in order for the roof decking to go on top. And usually if you have the roofer do that for you, you're going to save some money. If you're going to have to bring in a carpenter, it becomes a question of logistics, a framer, really, not a carpenter. The reason being is because they literally have to be doing the job hand in hand, could, like they say. So you have to be, you have to have that conversation with the roofer. What they do is they chop off the chimney to the roof decking level, and they will keep the chunk in the attic there. And then what you do is you reframe that area, and then you just put your roof right on top. So when it comes time, go ahead.
I was thinking, okay, that's fine. That part works. Now, later in the next couple of years, when I decide to redo the bathroom, I want to remove the stack that's going through the bathroom to enlarge the space. Is that going to affect what I've done on the roof?
Absolutely not. So the rule of thumb with chimneys is you're starting from the top down, right? So if you would have told me that the bathroom on the main floor, you want to do that chimney stack before the one on the second floor, I tell you that won't happen. But the fact that you're doing it from the roof going down, that works. Eventually, whatever you have in the main floor, if you do take care of it for the bathroom and the second floor, then you can also take it down again in the main floor when you're ready for that. So it's just a question of, think of it as piles of bricks, and you're just breaking them down from the top to the bottom.
Mark, thank you so much for calling in. 514-790-0800 by phone and 514-800 by text to speak to Walter Assey, president of Renovco. Walter, we had Jan texting in from Greenfield Park, and she wants to know, she has a 20-year-old fridge. She says, can you tell me why every now and then it makes a popping sound, but she has no problems with the freezer?
Popping sound. I can't really tell you. I'm not very good with fridges.
Okay.
I really can't tell you. I mean, it's the bottom line is it working as far as keeping the temperature? That's number one.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a compressor issue, because if it were a compressor issue, it just won't work.
Yeah.
So, you know, I really can't tell you and pinpoint it. It's not part of my specialty, but I can tell you it's not a compressor issue.
Perfect. If you have questions, again, for Walter, because you're listening to the Home Improvement Show here on CJ8800, give us a call, 514-790-0800 by phone and 514-800 by text.
This is the Home Improvement Show on News Talk Radio, CJ8800.
Good morning. It's Kelly Alexander sitting in for Ken Connors on the Home Improvement Show with Walter Assey, president of Renovco. If you have questions, 514-790-0800 by phone and 514-800 by text. We're heading off to Dimitri now in Chamonix. You've got a question about climate?
Yes, good morning. I would like to ask Walter if you have any information about the Renault Climat.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yeah, I think. Can you hear him, Dimitri?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Go ahead.
So, yes, I do. I mean, typically what you want to do is call in a Renault Climat inspector. They come to your home, and the service, if you don't ask for a report, it's free. So they come and they do what you call an audit.
Okay.
So they would determine all the weak points that you have in the house. From air escaping to lack of insulation, windows, ventilation, and so on and so forth. And then once you ask for an audit report, that's when you would pay for it. They will send you everything that they are recommending that you do. And it's usually attached to a subvention. So there's a percentage that the government will kick in, or in certain cases, Hydro-Québec, depending on what you do. So once the job is done, you get the subventions back. There are subventions now for conversions. So if you are, if you are installing a heat pump or a more efficient furnace, if you're replacing your windows, your doors, adding insulation, so on and so forth, these are all subject to the money that you will get back.
Dimitri, do you have another question?
How much is the percentage?
It depends. There are things that are a bit more aggressive. Like I know now for conversion, for energy conversion, it's a lot more aggressive. So I've seen cases where it goes up to $10,000 in kickbacks if you do any conversion. So it's really, it's going to boil down to what you do. And depending on every year, by the way, they kind of tweak the program. So they add things, they remove things, or they add certain subventions. Right now, where they're really going aggressive is the oil conversion. So that's probably would be the first thing that you want to look at if you are heating by oil right now. Windows and doors as well. There is about, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, it's about 10% kickback. But what they do is they give you a percentage up to a certain amount, if you know what I mean. So it's, let's say if your windows cost 200 grand, they're not going to give you 20 grand back. They're going to say, okay, we have a certain percentage up to that amount of money that you will get back from the government.
Dimitri, thank you so much for calling in. 514-790-0800 by phone and 514-800 by text. Walter, I just wanted to mention this because earlier on, Jan had texted in from Greenfield Park about her question about the fridge. And someone else has just texted in saying that they also had that loud popping sound and then the fridge eventually broke down. They called, I guess, for help, and a tech person came in and replaced the motherboard for $200. So I just, in case that could be the problem. Yeah. So just wanted to pass that along. We have another text coming in saying, Walter, I have a metal roof, a traditional vertical sheet roof. I've been told by a roofer and gutter, professional that the sliding ice will damage and rip out the gutters. Thoughts?
So yes and no. Number one is the size of the gutter. So if you have a gutter that is 4 inches and you have a big slope on the roof, anything, even a shingle roof, would be a problem. Usually when you have a metal roof, it is true that you have that the snow would slide much faster. But that's why you would install roof guards. If that's the case, not necessarily everywhere. You're going to install the roof guards in areas where you have the steepest or the longest span of a roof. You know, some of them actually look nice as well. So if you do have the roof guards, you're not going to have that issue. If you don't have the roof guards, you're going to look at the size of your gutter. So if the gutter is 4 inches, no good. 5 inches, in certain cases, for the span is no good. Most of them are 5 inches. But if you find that your roof have a bigger span, then maybe you're going to have to go with 6-inch gutters. These are more, we call them commercial quality. And you might also entertain roof guards in these areas as well.
Amazing. Oh, Walter, do you have something else to add to that? No, that's good. Okay. Thank you so much for that text to 514-800. We had another question from Linda, and we're up against the wall, Walter, but I think you can probably get it in. They went from an oil furnace and an AC unit to electric furnace and a heat pump. They're hearing banging noises from the ducts occasionally.
That's probably an airflow problem. So there's two issues that you might have. Either you have to adjust the airflow, or in a case, they might have put a furnace that is too big for the size of your ducts. So what I would start with is the adjustment of the airflow. If that doesn't work, then I'm going to have another conversation with the technician that installed the furnace. So if it's a bigger size furnace, if you had... So the airflow or bigger size heat pump, if you had 3 ton and now you move to 4 ton, that might be an issue for the size of the duct that you have. But start with adjusting the airflow. That's the cheaper way and the faster way to see if that works.
Walter, we're just about out of time, but before I let you go, any final tip just as we head into spring?
Plan ahead. Look at all your problems that you're having. If you have a foundation crack, a roof issue, and what have you, start booking from now because the good guys get taken first.
Perfect. Walter, you're a good guy. Thank you for hanging out with us.
Thank you for coming, Kelly. I really appreciate it.
That is Walter Assey, president of Renovco, and he'll be back with Ken on the Home Improvement Show next Saturday at 9 o'clock. My thanks to Jimmy G for producing the show. Coming up next after the 10 o'clock news, it's Lisa Christensen with The Car Show. My name is Kelly Alexander. You're listening to CJAD 800.